objectives for this talk are that we recognize as a group the need to develop strategies to improve influenza vaccination in pregnant women, and that you understand what I titled here a model program. I'm not so sure it is, but a model program to increase influenza vaccine coverage in pregnant women, and to be able to adapt elements of this program to your practice situation. First of all, ACIP recommends that pregnant women receive the inactivated influenza vaccine, and vaccine can be given in any stage of pregnancy. And our U.S. coverage is only about 12.8% in this vulnerable population. Some background about the clinic I work at. Kelsey Siebold Clinic is a primary and multi-specialty care clinic in the Houston area, and we have over 300 physicians in 18 sites with obstetrics in 12 of those sites. And I was appointed the sort of informally and laughingly appointed the immunization czarina for Kelsey Siebold Clinic back when there was a drug czar for the country, and I have a primary responsibility for increasing immunization rates and formalizing policies about immunization throughout the 60-member pediatric department since 1993. And then I started expanding my sphere by putting standing orders in place clinic-wide since 1998. There had been standing orders in place, but they were not standardized across all of our locations. And I received a formal assignment to work on immunization issues in the adult medicine areas since 2001. And the reason I mention this really is that it's important if you don't have, if you're a large group and you don't have a physician champion for immunizations. A lot of clinics, I think, have nurse champions. And sometimes I think physicians are resistant to changing unless another physician gets in on the act. And so I just think that that was an important part of our overall program. And then immunization in obstetrics is something important to understand. Immunization is not routine in most OB-GYN practices. It's becoming more routine, I think, now with the introduction of Gardasil because patients are asking for it. But most immunization practices really don't have the infrastructure and the technical expertise among their nurses to immunize routinely. And I was at a talk yesterday where Dr. Stanley Gall said that 76% or 74% of a group of OB-GYNs that were surveyed from ACOG provide immunization in their practice. But I think being able to provide immunization in your practice isn't the same as immunizing everybody in your practice who needs it. I work as a pediatric hospitalist as well in a birthing hospital, and so I have a lot of contact with OB-GYNs, and this is by no means a formal survey, but I asked every OB-GYN I met for 2 weeks, do you immunize, this was like in September, do you offer flu vaccine in your office? And none of them, other than the ones that I work with who are part of a multi-specialty group, offered flu vaccine in their practices. And the responses I got were, well, we encourage flu vaccine, but we tell them to go get it at the pharmacy. We write a prescription for them to get it at the pharmacy, and they can either get it there or they can bring it back up to the office and we'll give it. Or no, we tell them to go to their PCP to get it. Or no, we tell them to go to the health department to get it. And so many of them perceived that they were recommending vaccine to their patients, but in fact they were putting barriers to their patients receiving it because their patients then have to take the initiative or take another day off of work to go get the vaccine someplace else. And then when you go to the someplace else, for example, at an immunization clinic at Kelsey Siebold, you might encounter someone who says, well, you know, I'm not going to sign for that because she's pregnant. Because they have false contraindications for giving vaccine to pregnant women. So although ACIP and CDC and ACOG recommend immunization for pregnant women, it's not well accepted by OB-GYNs and pregnant women that they would get that in their OB-GYN's office. And there continues to be, despite a change in the recommendations in 2003, which made vaccination in the first trimester more permissive. There used to be sort of an unwritten rule that vaccination in the first trimester should be avoided because of concerns that a woman, there's a higher risk of miscarriage in the first trimester, and there was a concern that miscarriages might be attributed to vaccination and therefore increase fear of vaccination, et cetera. And then finally, insurance, interestingly enough, no matter what kind of insurance you have, it tends to bundle obstetrical care. So the insurance companies don't see that flu vaccination recommendations from the CDC are part of that bundled care. And so vaccinating in an OB's office actually represents an additional unreimbursed expense. Or they can try and recover the expense from the patient, but the patient comes in at the beginning of her pregnancy and pays for the whole pregnancy care, pays her copay or whatever it is, and so she doesn't feel she should get a charge at every visit. So if she's charged for the flu vaccine, she may raise a fuss. So, you know, I think that this is an issue that insurance companies are going to need to deal with, and it's definitely a barrier. At least in our practice, it's a big barrier. So at Kelsey Siebel Clinic, we're fortunate, because of my background doing standing orders, we were fortunate that we had a really robust immunization infrastructure. Vaccines are offered in all of our sites except for a very few, which are just subspecialty sites like ophthalmology. And there is nurse training on vaccination available through a clinical education department, and most of our 500 or more nurses receive their CEUs through our education department, which offers this training regularly. We had standing orders, as I said, written and in place in all of our clinics. And we're an arrogant group of physicians. And we have a strong interest in best practices and really feel like we're the best physicians in Houston. So that, I think, can really play into your favor if you make them understand that they're not the best physicians in Houston in some ways. We also had strong physician leadership, Dr. Frances Smith, in the OB-GYN department, and she was more than willing to jump onto the bandwagon of getting our OBs into immunizing their patients. And finally, we had an electronic billing system which offered easy data collection and analysis through the Kelsey Research Foundation. So these were all of our strengths. Now, this is why I hesitate to say we were a model program. Despite all of those strengths, the fact that vaccine was available in all our OB-GYN departments, our OB-GYNs knew that they should be vaccinating for influenza, our baseline rate in pregnant women was 3.5%. And that was not 1 year. That was based on billing data from 1998 to 2002. Influenza vaccines billed through Kelsey Siebel OB-GYN departments and all of our other departments, family medicine, internal medicine, anywhere else that woman may have shown up in our 300-doctor group were included. So we can't really blame that they were referring them to the primary care physician. The only thing that we didn't capture was outside immunization. So if somebody got a immunization at a pharmacy, for example, we wouldn't be able to capture that, or if they got it at their work. And I can tell you, because we also run campaigns at businesses, the businesses don't really want you giving pregnant women the vaccine, even if you're running a campaign at their work site. There's a real fear about that. So I don't think that that would have contributed significantly to our rate. And even though we have that code now, it is used just irregularly. Some of the obstetricians, you know, want to make their rates go up, and they're really good at putting that in, and others are not good at using it at all. So we developed an approach. I'm going to use this KS. That's our symbol for Kelsey Siebel. I kind of like it for this presentation. It looks like a pregnant K, and so I think it's appropriate for the presentation. Our approach was that we revised and readopted standing orders for influenza vaccine administration and included a special section on administration in obstetric patients, and encouraged, when we rolled these standing orders out this year, or in that year, which was 2003, we really encouraged all of our areas to understand, you know, internal medicine, pediatrics, everybody to understand that pregnancy is not a contraindication but an indication for this vaccine. And we made a specific effort to train our obstetrical nurses on the use of standing orders and our physicians, because they weren't used to immunizing at all. We also simultaneously developed a physician and employee annual healthcare worker immunization campaign. And so there was a lot of information that we were sending out through broadcast emails and prescription newsletter notices and website postings on immunization. And we made sure to include information on immunization and pregnancy in all of those bulletins and emails. And we start our employee campaign every year by surveying our employees on their knowledge and attitudes toward influenza vaccination for themselves and for their patients, so that we can target those informational pieces to their knowledge deficits. And this is just an example of one of our things. We send a true-false every week, and This year it was set up so that you had to click on true or false, and then you got a smiley face or you got a frown, you know, and you got the right information. But in previous years it was just like this, where you could read it, and then, you know, it was a little bit harder to read the answer, so you could kind of blind yourself. So the third and actually most important thing that we did was, as in pediatrics and in other areas, we assessed the actual rates by provider. And we did that using our billing database. And then we had direct encouragement and feedback on those rates through the head of the OB-GYN department for each obstetrician. And we also provided, I came to the OB-GYN department meetings and talked about vaccination, and we provided more information to the staff during their quarterly departmental meetings. So this is the result of our interventions, and I'm proud to say that we've increased, but we've still got a long way to go. I want to point out that the data for 2007-2008 is not complete. The way we collected this data was we actually realized that we couldn't blame people for not vaccinating a woman who miscarried early before she could have come in, and it's really kind of complex to pick your rates out of billing data because immunization season lasts 6 or 7 months from September through March or so, and pregnancy lasts 9 months, and there's a kind of an overlap problem in deciding who do you choose. Do you choose somebody who became pregnant in January, didn't really find out she was pregnant until February, didn't make her first OB visit till March, so now she shouldn't necessarily get that vaccine, you know, and then by September she's delivered, so she doesn't get vaccine. Or do you count somebody who got it in March, got the vaccine in March when they were pregnant in their first trimester and delivered in October but didn't get it that October? So there's some issues with how you can actually calculate the rate and who you include. So you can't just take all pregnant women and see if all pregnant women got a vaccine, because some of them didn't qualify for vaccine and some qualified for two vaccines. So that's an issue. So you'll see that my first box actually has our baseline rate at 2.5%, and that's because for this slide we decided to make the criteria the same for each year, and back in 98 through 03 we weren't pushing vaccine past about January, end of January. So it actually lowered our rates and made us look even less of a model program. But we're currently up to 46% or 43% for this year. And we decided to look at our data as well by whether patients were healthy or unhealthy during their pregnancy, trying to see if having diabetes, for example, during pregnancy, where you have two indications to get vaccine, increased your rate of vaccination. And it really didn't increase your rate particularly, although it may be having a little trend towards increasing it. The number of prenatal care visits in an earlier study by Dr. Munoz and Dr. Gleason in 2004 and 2005 of this same data set, but just of those earlier years, did demonstrate that the number of prenatal care visits was the strongest predictor for vaccination. Again, it's a missed opportunity thing. If people keep thinking about it and people come back in, they're going to have more opportunities to be vaccinated. And then we also decided to look at vaccination by trimester of gestation, and this also plays into that whole, you know, matching up vaccination season with stage of pregnancy issue. So it doesn't really show any significant trend, but you'll notice at least in the first trimester, in 2003-04 is when it was first sort of more permissive to give vaccine in the first trimester, and I think our OB-GYNs are becoming more comfortable in giving the vaccine in that trimester now. I think there's the rest of it reflects really more when people find out they're pregnant and when flu vaccination season starts. And I just wanted to also crow a little bit about our employee vaccine rate. We really feel that the employers are becoming more comfortable with being vaccinated, and therefore they're more comfortable vaccinating all of our patients, including our OB-GYN patients. And so, and then finally, Dr. Munoz also did a little study which we've used in teaching our OB-GYNs to vaccinate. She did a study also in 2004-05, it's part of that other study, showing that vaccination in pregnancy is indeed safe and that outcomes are in fact better for vaccinated women than for non-vaccinated women. So our conclusion was that influenza vaccination rates in pregnant women can be improved substantially with the use of standing orders that have specific information about vaccination in pregnancy, training of personnel, and active educational and promotional activities by vaccine champions, focusing on encouraging influenza immunization in patients and healthcare providers. But again, as we all know, assessment of rates and feedback to providers is crucial. And insurance reimbursement can be a barrier to vaccination of women in pregnancy. Any questions?
Farooq Ahmed, CDC. You mentioned that bundling was an issue. Insurance companies bundling pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering whether your clinic staff were billing, because it won't get paid anyway.
We're about 70% fee-for-service and about 30% HMO. And so for our HMO patients, it really doesn't matter because, you know, we're covered for that and they don't have to pay a copay. For our PPO patients and fee-for-service, we've had to start calling in advance. This really is a barrier, and I don't think we have the best answer. We've started calling in advance for approval for the immunization at the OB visit. And of course, that's going to vary by the clinic administrator and the nursing personnel and who's picked up on which one needs vaccine still to do that. But we do that in our spare time at our front desk. They call for vaccine approval, and it really is an issue. And so the other interesting part of that is that an OB-GYN is a specialty care visit. And for most people, their insurance requires a higher copay for a specialty care visit than a primary care visit. So if you go to your PCP to get your influenza shot, your copay is $10. But if you go to your primary care doctor, it's $35. Mm. And so our fee-for-service charge is less than some people's specialty care copay. So we've been doing a lot of bargaining and negotiating and figuring out what we can do. And so sometimes we charge fee-for-service for the vaccine because it's lower than a specialty copay, or sometimes a woman will choose to go to our primary care doctor to get it or to make an immunization-only appointment. And one area that I really want to try and get rolling is we do an intake visit with a nurse before the pregnant woman ever sees an OB-GYN. She has a nurse-only appointment where she gets her blood drawn for her rubella status and her HIV status and, you know, all the other blood work that they need done, and she gets counseling and information on diet, and she gets a prescription for vitamins. And I would love to put the flu vaccine at that very first visit. But it's a nurse-only visit, and the you know, it's more complicated even than just giving it with their first OB-GYN visit. Let me just put it at that. So there are really lots of ways this could be further streamlined, but the insurance factor and the bundled care is really a big part of it. And if it's that way for us, we're, you know, for a huge organization that's got advocates that deal only with billing and insurance, you know, then for a small provider's office, it's huge.
Couple of questions. One is that when you showed the data for 2007, 2008, mm-hmm. there's significantly less number of people in that group. Is there
again? What we did was we picked people who delivered between October 1st and August 1st, I believe. And so that was so that we could catch the people who were in a window where they were both pregnant and it was a season mm-hmm. to be immunized. And so a lot of the women, we can't count the women who haven't delivered yet,
okay.
basically. So okay. that's why the number is so low.
So you're still giving them the opportunity to get vaccinated.
Right, and until about the end of March, and then they have to deliver by August. So okay. once we get the whole year's data, it'll be, you know, September before we have this year's entire set of data.
And then this may be off the subject, but did you ever think about trying to institute a Tdap vaccination program for the
Our standing orders actually include authorization for the OB-GYN nurses to give Tdap, to give TD, in case the women refuse Tdap, to give hepatitis B vaccine if they've had more than one sexual partner or are unmarried, and you know there's some concern about that. You've got to take baby steps or bite the elephant one bite at a time, whatever metaphor you want to use. I think that that's not taken hold as much. In addition to doing this, as I told you, I work at the birthing hospital, so I'm doing the education postpartum and asking all my postpartum moms to request a Tdap at the hospital. So I think that the other thing that inhibits that a little bit is, even though AAP and ACOG recommend it in pregnancy, it's not licensed for pregnancy. And oh, postpartum, yeah. Postpartum, we're working on it. But antepartum is a good idea, too. Honestly, it's a great idea. But in a big organization like mine, then you have fear of lawsuit or, you know, there are other issues that come into play. So we haven't started doing the Tdap in pregnancy, although we're recommending it postpartum.
I meant postpartum.
Yeah. No, I'm recommending it postpartum, but it's not as set a program as this. Thank you.